Welcome to the Green Acres Garden Podcast with Farmer Fred. It's the podcast that'll help gardeners like you get an even greener thumb. Whether you're new to gardening or a seasoned horticulturist, you're sure to learn something new. I'm Farmer Fred, Master Gardener Fred Hoffman, and today we'll be talking about bare root fruit trees, pre-emergence, frost protection, things to do in the garden this week, and a little bit about the history of Green Acres Nursery. Let's go. Welcome to the very first episode of the Green Acres Garden Podcast, and we're glad to be at a Green Acres location that is one of their newest acquisitions, although you probably know it as Isley's Nursery. It is now Green Acres at Isley's, and we are talking with two of the newest owners of this place. We've got Ashley Rossi and Travis Gill, and you're part of a garden and farming family, really.
Yes, we are. Our dad, Mark Gill, and Travis Gill, my brother, myself, Ashley Rossi, became farmers in 2014 out at Matsuda's, but have been in the retail garden side of the business, Travis and I, since 2003, Mark, since we were little. He probably wouldn't want us to share that number.
I recall seeing you. You were much younger back then, running around, I think it was the Northern California Home and Landscape Show. I don't know how many years ago was that Green Acres made its first initial appearance into the Sacramento area.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, we started in 2003 when we were at the Home and Landscape Show. It probably would have been a couple years after that, maybe like right around 2008 when the Sac store came online, I think. But yeah, one of the first booths or garden home shows we did was not there, but the Roseville Home Show, and I rented a bunch of baby pigs because we thought we'd have a pig for our mascot back then as Green Acres. And so we had a bunch of baby pigs at this home show, which was a great attraction, but no one knew we sold plants. They thought we sold pigs. So we did something different the next year.
Well, understandable. It's understandable. Now, before we get along too far, there are several Green Acres locations. And Travis, the very first one, I guess, was the Roseville store.
It was. We opened it in July 4th, 2003.
Good memory.
Yeah, 901 Galleria Boulevard.
What has been the progression of the nursery since then?
So we opened up 2003 in Roseville, and then we opened up the Sacramento store and technically took possession of the property on December 28th, 2007, but we kind of got it open in 2008. Folsom, 2012, Elk Grove, 15, Rockland, 17, Auburn, 2020, and now we have a new store in Citrus Heights opening up next year.
All right, and that's opening probably in spring.
We're hoping to hit March 1st, but there's a lot of work to get done between now and then. Hopefully sometime March.
Now, Travis, the Matsuda's name is very famous in our area. Of course, you acquired the Matsuda's retail nursery a few years before you acquired their rather large wholesale operation.
It's a wholesale facility where we generate a lot of our product that we sell at our retail stores. It's a 160-acre property. We have about 130 acres in containerized production, and it's where I've lived for the last 7 years of my life to get it. You know, it was a beautiful facility when we bought it, but it needed some updating, and we've put quite a bit into it in the last couple of years.
And exactly. And again, it's a wholesale nursery where the plants that you grow at your nurseries are grown originally. And I imagine there are sales to other nurseries as well.
Yeah. So about somewhere in the range of about half the product we grow actually goes to Green Acres, and the other half goes to other independent garden centers, just like Isley's here in Auburn, all over the Bay Area. We ship to, you know, northern Nevada, southern Oregon.
Wholesale growing has expanded to such a point in Sacramento and Placer County that nursery production is now ranked third in both Sacramento and Placer County. And Ashley, a lot of that is due to your family.
Yeah, it's really exciting to see. Nursery production all throughout the state of California is actually pretty big business, but it's kind of like the underground ag. It doesn't get talked about as much. But yeah, it's Sacramento Valley and Placer County are a great place to grow nursery product, and the market is, you know, here and around the state. So it's really cool to see that the nursery contributes to such a large part of the local economy.
Isley's Nursery has been famous over the years for growing poinsettias, Easter lilies, and of course, tomato and pepper plants for many, many nurseries. They've been doing it for decades, and I'm glad, Travis, to see the tradition continuing. As you pointed out, this building is probably Earl's
growing grounds.
Yeah, it is. It's Earl Seed House. His old fridge is here. It still has a lot of his seed in it that we're, you know, carrying out. We have a new fridge now and a new planting line, but we're still sourcing seed from the same sources. He collects a lot of his own seed every year, which we will continue to do. Isley's wax pepper seed is obviously Isley's. There's several other varieties that they actually harvest the seed here in-house.
So here it is. We're in late January, and I'm in a greenhouse filled with tomato and pepper starts. But hold your horses, folks. It'll be a while before these hit the stores.
Yeah, from this stage going forward, right now, this early in the season, we put them in what's called a 128 flat. So think of like that jumbo pack that you buy at the, you know, Green Acres. It's a six pack. It's kind of like that, but it has 128 cells. So they're very small. Realistically, we take them out of these 128s and put them into the 4-inch, which is the finished size that you guys buy. We're probably looking at 2 to 6 weeks, depending on variety, before they're on a store shelf.
Just 2 to 6 weeks?
Yeah.
That's after they're transplanted to 4-inch pots.
Correct. Yeah, which they're actually slated to transplant some of these this week.
For all the early acquisitioners out there.
Yes, there's quite a few people, especially when you go up into the hills, who want those heirloom varieties that they need. They're later on in the year for ripening and harvesting, and they have to get them started early, and a lot of times they'll even just put them in a kitchen windowsill or whatever to bulk them up.
And I know a lot of people are wondering if you will continue with the tradition of growing poinsettia plants here.
We will. The poinsettia market is a tough market for a grower. You know, you have a hard time finding any nursery operation that likes growing poinsettias, frankly, because the mass merchants just give them away on Black Friday. But it is a tradition that we are going to continue in the clay pots, diversifying, differentiating the varieties, not just your standard, you know, Christmas red. It's going to be unique, colorful varieties that are fun and unique.
And that's great. And what's nice, too, is the fact that the industry, both the wholesale and the retail industry, has made it through COVID with, well, let's face it, you're allowed to stay open.
Yes, we are essential. And I think we've been incredibly fortunate amongst all industries that were outside. So we operate outside, which has, you know, by the grace of God, been proven to be like a COVID-safe activity. Gardening has become a COVID-safe activity for customers to do at home. There, you get exercise when you're gardening. Soil is like a proven antidepressant, actually. You get vitamin D. You're sprucing up your house. You're investing in your home and landscape. I mean, the benefits go on and on, but during COVID, people have definitely found gardening as a hobby, and then we have been fortunate enough to be open to be there to meet their needs and help them be successful in their new gardening efforts and their old ones.
And that is certainly a trying thing to do, to keep up with the spread of gardening. It has exploded, Travis, as you know, and just keeping up with the demand for plants and seed has the whole industry scrambling.
Yeah, I think the Hawthorne Group, or one of these big gardening conglomerations, came out with a number like there was 30 million new gardeners in the United States this year. And that's really good for an industry like us. I think it's also good for America and people.
One more question before I let you two go out of this rather warm greenhouse is, what are the addresses for all of the Green Acres store? Who wants to try that?
Well, I'll start with the easy one, 901 Galleria Boulevard, and then the second is...
That would be Roseville.
Yes, sorry, Roseville, and then 85201 Jackson Highway.
205 Serpa Way, Folsom, California. Rockland is 5436 Crossings Drive, Rockland, California.
Elk Grove is 9220 East Stockton Boulevard, Elk Grove.
And Auburn is 380 Nevada Street, Auburn, California.
And the new one that's opening later this year.
Ooh, 6128 San Juan Avenue at the corner of Greenback.
In Citrus Heights.
Yes, in Citrus Heights.
Green Acres Nursery and Supply, we're so happy that they are sponsoring the Green Acres Garden Podcast. Ashley Rossi, Travis Gill, best of luck. Good growing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit about frost protection. Yes, I know it's late January. The weather has been in the upper 60s. Still, frost can still happen here. The typical Sacramento area frost season, when temperatures dip to 32 or below for short periods of time, It is fairly short. Primarily, it's December and January. However, you can have frost in November. I remember the Thanksgiving frost of 2010. The morning low temperatures in the suburbs of Sacramento dipped into freezing territory. 28 in Elk Grove, 24 in Rancho Cordova, 23 in Folsom. And the temperatures in Rancho Cordova and Folsom that Thanksgiving morning stayed below 28 degrees for 7 hours. Now that's a citrus-killing, perennial-punching hard freeze. And yes, frost can happen late into the season, even into spring. The latest frost date ever recorded in our area was back on March 27th of 1898, and that was a low of 32 degrees. So let's have a little definition of terms here. What is a frost? What is a freeze? What is a hard freeze? Well, a frost is when temperatures dip to 32 degrees for very short periods of time. It usually occurs with fair skies and light winds. A freeze is when temperatures are at or below 32 degrees for an extended period of time, but not more than several hours. Now, when temperatures drop to 28 or below for several hours, that's called a hard freeze. And still, be it frost, freeze, or hard freeze, fruit-laden citrus trees could be threatened by very cold mornings in the weeks ahead. So, how about some planning tips when you hear the weather person say it's going to get below freezing? Well, ideally, you want to identify cold spots in the landscape by monitoring with a thermometer that registers high and low temperatures. You want to do this beforehand. The reason you want to do this is because that thermometer that's attached to the side of your house is going to fool you. Out in the middle of your yard, it could be as much as 6 degrees colder on these frosty mornings. You can find several choices of outdoor thermometers at your favorite Green Acres nursery and supply store. And you want to identify plants that are at risk. That could be citrus, succulents, tender perennials, tropical or subtropical plants. If they're in containers and that frost or freeze is forecast, you can move those containers closer to the house, preferably on the south or west side where they can get some reflected heat. But have supplies ready, and that would be frost cloths. Those are ideal. Frost cloths still allow air and water to permeate, but they can provide 6 to 8 degrees of protection if you choose a medium-weight frost cloth. And they have medium-weight frost cloths at Green Acres. One important part, though, when covering a plant with a frost cloth, be sure to extend it all the way to the ground, from the top of the plant to the ground. Secure it to the ground at the outer canopy of the tree. That'll allow the heat from the ground to emanate into the plant overnight. And don't forget lights, especially the large Christmas lights. Those can put off a lot of heat and can protect your plants on a cold night, especially when you combine it with a frost cloth. Long term, you want to prepare tender plants for an upcoming frost season. Ideally, avoid fertilizing and pruning after August to minimize tender new growth. In September and October, you can do a little plant insurance, take cuttings from frost-sensitive perennials, and keep the cuttings in a sunny indoor area until the following spring. So again, when a frost is forecast, move those potted plants that are tender to a warmer spot next to the house or under a patio cover. Check that plants are well watered, since dry plants are more susceptible to damage and moist soil retains heat better than dry soil. But there is one big exception to that, and that's succulents. Succulents want to be on the dry side when a frost is forecast. Otherwise, you could have problems with bursting roots from that excess water in succulent plants. If you're covering your plants with a frost cloth or a row cover, do it before sunset to capture the ground radiating heat upwards at night. But remove the covers daily if it's sunny and above freezing to allow the soil to absorb heat. By the way, those frost cloths can do double duty as row covers in the early spring. If you just planted transplants of maybe cool season vegetables now, or your summer vegetables and flowers a little bit later on in the season, and you'll want to protect them from the flying bad guys, the aphids, the white flies, cover them with that frost cloth. Ideally, make a tunnel to allow more air into that area. There are metal hoops available for that very purpose. But again, if it's going to be warm that day, you may want to remove or open up that frost cloth to allow more air in and then put it back on at night. If a hard freeze is expected and you have tender trees, you want to wrap the trunks. You can use towels, blankets, rags, or pipe insulation. And generally, you want to harvest ripe citrus fruit when a frost or freeze is forecast. Generally, both green and ripe fruit are damaged below 30 degrees, but there is some variation by species. Some of the hardiest citrus are mandarins. They can take temperatures down to 26 degrees or so. The most tender? It's usually limes and lemons. And something you may not think about before the frost season, and that's the gas in your outdoor power equipment. Cold weather and gasoline don't necessarily mix. So winterize your gasoline-powered garden equipment. Gas can go bad and screw up your engines if allowed to overwinter unused. So drain the tanks or turn off the supply valve and run the engine until it stops. For containerized gas or gas still in equipment, add a stabilizer. Run the engine for 10 minutes or so to make sure the stabilized gas is thoroughly mixed into the engine. Now, if a hard freeze is forecast when temperatures drop below 28 degrees, wrap any exposed plastic water pipes. Use a cover for outdoor faucets. Turn off the water supply to outdoor irrigation faucets that are exposed, if that's possible, and allow those faucets to drain. Disconnect garden hoses and lay them out straight, but don't lay them across the driveway. You never want to run over with a car a frozen hose. Adjust your pool, spa, or pond filtration timer so they're running when the chance of freezing temperatures is greatest, which is usually between 2 and 9 a.m. Moving water is less susceptible to freezing. Maybe you have dish-shaped fountains. Well, turn them off and let them drain to the holding tank below. Remove any standing water in the dish. So let's say we have a frost or a freeze. You go outside and you see damaged plants. What should you do? The best idea? Do nothing until spring. So if you see dark brown or black leaves and twigs, wait till spring to prune out the damage when all danger of frost is past, because new growth can't begin, and that new growth will be protected by that dead growth that's on top of the plant. And make sure the backyard bird bath isn't frozen over the morning after a freeze. And don't forget, daily fresh water for dogs and cats is also a good morning habit. We're at the Green Acres Nursery and Supply in Folsom, and we're talking with sales associate Steve Bikini. And he's the guy to talk to if you want to talk about fruit trees or roses. And that's what we're going to talk about today. It's bare root fruit tree season. What a wonderful time of the year it is. It's interesting how the definition of bare root has changed over the years. I mean, you know, a long time ago, you'd go to a nursery and you'd yank out a stick out of sawdust looking at bare roots. Now, when you go to buy a bare root fruit tree, they're all potted up.
They are. They're. We've got them here at Green Acres. We've got them in our fiber pots. And what that is it keeps the roots nice and moist for a long period of time until you're able to plant them. And the fiber pot does decompose in the ground. So when you can dig your hole, you can score the fiber pot, put it in the ground, and it's a very easy way to plant your fruit tree.
Exactly, and it's got a little lip on it as well to make it easy to move around. And probably the best thing about having them in pots for anybody buying fruit trees, in the old days, if you just yanked that tree out of the sawdust and took it home, you better plant it really soon because those roots are going to dry out. In pots like this, with so much soil around it, you could wait till the following week or the week after that.
Absolutely. That soil or that media that it's around the roots right now is moist, and that's going to keep the roots moist, keep the tree alive for a very successful winter planting season.
Now, you use the term scoring the pot. Explain what that is.
So what you would do is get a razor knife, and you would actually cut the fiber lip around the pot, cut that off, and then score it would be put an X on the sides of the pot. Now, what that's going to do is that's going to promote the decomposition of the fiber pot and let the roots expand out and get established in your hole.
And do you ever score the bottom of it?
You do. At the bottom of the fiber pot, you put an X on that too to aid in the decomposition.
Now, I know people with stress issues who, instead of using a knife, will just take a screwdriver and stab at the pot.
Right. Yeah, you can do that also. I like to use the razor knife. That seems to make nice, clean cuts. Be careful, though, with that.
Exactly. And because they're in soil, again, you can wait to plant it. Fruit trees, like what sort of an environment in the backyard?
They like full sun?
All the fruit trees, deciduous fruit trees, love full sun. So pick a spot in your backyard that's going to get as much sun as possible, 6+ hours of full sun. Also, you want to take into account the size of the canopy. Where you're going to plant it, you're not going to go 1 foot from a fence. You're going to move that back about 2 to 3 feet from the fence because, remember, you're going to have a nice canopy full of fruit.
And when you plant a fruit tree, you're buying a stick, basically, because it's winter time. There's nothing on the tree. The sticks themselves are about 5-6 feet tall. How far back do you cut it after you plant it?
Yeah, great question. And this is what I do with my fruit trees. On berry season, you're going to plant this in your hole. And then what I do is I usually cut it with loppers, cut the tree knee high or 2 to 3 feet from the ground. So what that does, and your cut is going to be at an angle, basically. But what that's going to do is that's going to promote your scaffolding branching to come out in the spring. And then you're going to pick 4 or 5 dominant branches that it's going to be your scaffolding. So now you've got a nice low tree growing up, beautiful scaffolding and a nice canopy, and maybe a 6 or 7 foot tree that you can pick fruit from ground level.
Exactly. You want to stay off ladders. It makes it a lot easier, and it also makes it easier for netting or covering the tree to keep the birds and the rats out.
Absolutely. Yes.
There are a lot of choices here at Green Acres Nursery when it comes to bare root fruit trees. And I guess we should point out, we're talking bare root fruit trees, and we're talking, as you pointed out, deciduous fruit trees, whereas right next to us are citrus trees. And, I mean, you can plant citrus trees now, yes, but you're probably not going to get in a wider assortment until later in the winter or spring.
That's true. I probably won't get my delivery or a large delivery of citrus trees until late winter and early spring, but I will have a really good selection at that time.
You have a lot of fabulous trees here. Let's talk about some of the varieties. What are some of your favorite deciduous fruit trees to plant?
My favorite are the Bing and the Rainier. They pollinate great together. The Bing is the nice big dark red sweet cherry. The Rainier is the yellow and with a little blush cherry. It's also a very large cherry. The contrast on them are great. They taste fantastic, and they pollinize together very well.
That's very important. It takes two to tango for a lot of deciduous fruit trees, and it's true with cherries. And the Bing and the Rainier are two great companions. How do they have to be next to each other? How close should the trees be?
For pollination, they could be 125 to 150 feet away for pollination.
For those of you with acreage, and for a typical backyard, you could actually plant fruit trees. If you keep them at 6 or 7 feet tall, you can have a beautiful orchard of trees that are maybe 6 or 7 feet apart.
Absolutely. Six, seven, 8 feet apart is an ideal spacing for the dwarf rootstock.
All right, there's a lot more here than cherries, of course. I imagine you have all sorts of plums and apricots and pluots.
Absolutely. The plums and pluots are fantastic. There again, you have to look at the variety and make sure that they can pollinize each other. We also have a very large range of nectarines and peaches. And my favorite is the Asian pear. We've got 3 varieties of Asian pears, and those grow fantastic in this area.
Do Asian pears need a pollinizer?
There is one variety, the 20th century, that is self-fruiting but also pollinates others. There are 2 other varieties that need a pollinator.
All right. I know that one of my favorite Asian pears is the Shinseki, and it bears year after year.
Absolutely. That's a really good-tasting Asian pear.
How about apples?
Apples, I have a wide selection of apples. Now, on apples, the varieties that I have, the chill hours is really important. And that, if you come to Green Acres, you can see on our signage, we do list the chill hours. And you can see for your area which apple variety is going to work best or pollinate best in your area.
Good point. And here at the Folsom store, you've got customers that go up the hill quite a way up to Placerville and beyond. So they're going to have more chill hours here in Folsom. And for most of Sacramento, typically we get 600, 700, 800 chill hours. And most of these fruit trees, they'll do fine.
Absolutely. And so you can go online on and Google chill hours, and you can you'll get some UC Davis websites that are actually tracking the chill hours, and you can see for your city or your area what the chill hours is for this year and for 5 years past. And that'll give you a really good idea on which varieties of fruits to plant.
And if you're keeping score at home, so far this season, we've had here in the Sacramento area about 300 to 400 chill hours, which for mid-January is not bad at all. And the chill hours are hours that are under 45 degrees, ideally between 32 and 45 degrees. And they are hours accrued when the plant is dormant. And so that's November, December, January, and February. So we're hoping that we get a bit more chill and not too much heat during the day.
Absolutely. Now, there is another way to measure the chill hours. It's called chill units, and you can actually subtract the chill hours with temperatures above 60 degrees. So obviously, this year, it's really important to look at the chill units.
Right. Chill units take into the fact how hot it gets every day, which subtracts from the chill hours. And typically for most deciduous fruit trees in our area, they like about 67 chill units. And right now we're in the 40s. So far, so good.
Absolutely.
All right. We've pruned back the tree. We've planted it. What sort of care does it need in its first year?
In its first year, you want to make sure that your irrigation is set up. Now, you want to use a drip system. You want to make sure that you're providing enough water, but not too much, because you will get, if you're providing too much water, you will get some mildew issues with your brand new tree. So set up your drip system before the late spring so you don't have to scramble and worry about that in May. If you have some issues with or some questions on building your drip system, come to Green Acres. There's many irrigation gurus here that'll help you.
There you go. Give it a good home, and you're going to have fruit for life. Steve Bikini works here at the Folsom Green Acres Nursery and Supply Store. Steve, thanks for the info on bare root fruit trees.
Absolutely. It was great talking to you.
January is a great time to apply pre-emergence to lawn and garden areas to control unwanted weeds. Soil temperatures right now are in the upper 40s, and many warm season weeds are going to begin to emerge when those soil temperatures climb above 50, which in our area is usually mid to late February. Now remember, a pre-emergent weed control product will not control weeds that are already growing. So a good first step in a garden area is to remove all existing weeds and debris. Remember, too, to read and follow all label directions, because different pre-emergent products have different active ingredients. I'm here at Green Acres looking at three pre-emergent products, and all three have different ingredients to stop new weeds from growing. One product's active ingredient is orizolin. One has trifluralin. And the other uses corn gluten meal as its active ingredient. Each of those only controls certain weeds from growing. Each of those has different warnings about how, when, and where to apply it. So again, read and follow all label directions. Also, know the weeds you're trying to thwart. Know the plants that you're trying not to spray. Pre-emergence may adversely affect the growth of young, existing plants, and that includes certain types of turf. The label of the product will tell you exactly the precautions you need to take. Now, if you're not sure about the name of the weed you're trying to control, a good place to start is online. Do an internet search for the UCIPM Weed Gallery. There, you can find keys to help you ID the weed, as well as pictures. That, again, is the University of California Integrated Pest Management Weed Gallery, UCIPM Weed Gallery. Now, of course, you can always bring in a few good pictures or a sample of the weed for identification to your favorite Green Acres nursery location. Timing and application rates will also vary according to the pre-emergent product that you're using. Again, read and follow all label directions.
and be sure to correctly identify the weed you're trying to control. And if all that sounds too daunting, well, Green Acres does carry a wide array of weed control devices, including trowels, handheld hose, long-handled hose, and a lot more. And don't forget, a 4-inch layer of a medium to coarse mulch, such as the bagged bark products that you can find at Green Acres, can also thwart weed development. Mulch helps to maintain soil moisture, it moderates soil temperature, and as it breaks down, mulch is slowly feeding the soil. Now, what about weed cloth? Well, weed cloth is a permeable synthetic fabric that can be laid down and secured on bare soil to control the emergence of new weeds. Top that weed cloth with a few inches of mulch and make sure it is a permeable fabric that allows the water and air to pass through. Some weed cloth fabrics are one-sided. In other words, they need to be placed with a certain side up to allow water and air to get into the soil. Now, in my experience, weed cloths work best on a landscape that you don't plan to be doing any more replanting. That's why you see it used a lot on commercial landscape projects. But for home gardeners where replanting and weeding is more commonplace, weed cloth might be counterproductive. That's just a nice way of saying that when you start digging or pulling weeds that get established on top of the weed cloth and mulch, you might end up pulling a section of weed cloth with the weed or the shovel. And if you ever decide to remove that weed cloth, well, that can be a very time-consuming task. So again, weed cloth could be used instead of a pre-emergent, but it's better suited for a permanent landscape that you don't plan to change. So yes, pre-emergent sprays are an option for controlling soon-to-emerge weeds. They can do a great job of stopping weeds this time of year. But again, and you're going to get sick of me saying this, but it's true, be sure to read and follow all label directions. It may be winter, but there's plenty to do in your backyard in mid to late January. Here's just a few items to put on your to-do list. Plan on spraying your peach and nectarine trees this month with a copper fungicide. This is going to help you control peach leaf curl. And it's always a good idea when you're spraying fruit trees to add some horticultural oil, about a 1% horticultural spray oil, to that application mix. The oil also aids in the control of aphids, scale insects, and mites. A clean garden is a happy garden. Be sure to rake up and discard all the fallen leaves around your rose bushes. Those may be harboring next season's pest problems. And it is pruning season, but be sure to clean and sharpen all your pruning tools when you're done. Don't put them away wet and dirty because that encourages the formation of rust. Don't get over anxious with your pruners this time of year, though. Avoid pruning any freeze-damaged perennials, shrubs, or grasses this month. This is only if they're freeze-damaged. If it gets below freezing again, which is a possibility all the way through the end of February, those open wounds may invite further disaster. And moreover, the dead stems at the top of the plant are going to help protect the understory from more freezing temperatures. And it's from that understory you just might see new life spring forth come late winter. The 2021 collection of summer vegetable and flower seeds are coming into Green Acres over the next few weeks. Shop early for the best selection of outstanding varieties. You want to plant some seeds? Well, do it indoors. Start pepper seeds indoors in late January. Hold off, though, until February before planting tomato seeds. Use a seed-starting soil mix for best results, and adding bottom heat can hasten seed germination. Look for these special heating pads, they're also known as propagation mats, at Green Acres Nursery and Supply. Thank you for listening to the Green Acres Garden Podcast with Farmer Fred, brought to you by Green Acres Nursery and Supply, now with 6 locations in the greater Sacramento area and coming soon to Citrus Heights. For more information and to find the store nearest you, visit idiggreenacres.com. And for more great garden information, check out the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast. That's available wherever you get your podcasts. Gardeners, we appreciate your ears.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are Fred Hoffman's or his guests. These gardening tips and suggestions may work for you, as well as those from alternative sources available. When using any garden products or tools, read and follow all label directions.